Hey everyone, welcome to the latest episode of the SaaS Sessions podcast. Today we have Jugal on the show, Jugal Anchali on the show with us. Jugal has started multiple businesses in the past and had had great exits as well. He's currently building Cobalt as the CEO and co-founder, where Cobalt is an API platform for your companies to build, observe, and ship native integrations 10x faster. And Jugal, I met Jugal last year in Singapore, somewhere in February, and we were like traveling to a lot of events in the like past year together, attended a lot of events together. So like finally, Jugal, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sunil, for having me here. Really love your show. And It's great to see you start up again, like start a new season of the show.
Thanks. Cool. So I gave a very short intro, Jugal, about you. Like there's a lot that is out there already. But please walk us through like your journey into the SaaS ecosystem and how did you arrive at Cobalt?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm an engineer by background. Started my journey with starting something up long back. Back in 2015, I started my journey in the consumer market. This is the time when, Jio was just coming up in India. So we assumed like video consultation. Video is going to be a very, very big thing. So we built one of the first digital health and virtual consultation platform in India. That was my first company. We ran the company for 3 years. So built a complete global healthcare solution for Indians all around the world. They could talk to doctors, get second opinions, and in general, get ancillary healthcare services. Eventually, I exited the company, sold the company to a larger player in e-pharmacy space in India called Netmeds. And from there in, I started roaming around, started seeing a lot of processes, went into the buying process of SaaS as well, right? That's where I interacted with a lot of SaaS founders. I remember in 2020, I visited SaaS Bhumi as well. And I was really inspired by some of the early founders. So saw, what people are doing. And then came up to a very, very specific problem of integrations. And essentially that was the start of Cobalt. I somewhat faced that problem myself and then built Cobalt. Yeah.
Nice. But why great journey, Jugal, from consumer to SaaS, interesting pivot, but in this episode, obviously we're going to talk about integrations and how can companies use that as a growth lever, right? To grow. So like, but before we get there, like would love to understand two things. Why should you solve, or any company should solve, this problem of integrations, right? Like why does this problem exist and why you should solve for this?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? Being somebody who is new to SaaS, I realized one very important thing. Integration was always the central discussion in the buying process. So a very quick data point for you and for everybody, on an average in US right now, a company uses around 114 softwares inside the organization, right? That's a huge number of softwares. Now, suppose you are the 115th company that is going to that company trying to sell your software. So the immediate need from the buyer is that, hey, do you integrate with our ecosystem? So integration inherently is a very, very fundamental need. It's a deal breaker in many cases as part of the buying process. So we realize that this is a huge problem and the current alternatives are only limited, right? They are not very scalable, efficient. We can talk about in detail about the alternatives, but it's very, very limited. And that's where we saw this opportunity that, we can enable SaaS companies in scaling their integration marketplaces.
Nice. And again, just one thing before we get to like integrations as a growth lever, like why Cobalt is the answer to this problem, right? Like why do you think, or how does Cobalt help in any company, as you said, like, hey, this is an 115th app that you're selling. right? Into a company which already have 114 platforms. So now that like you belong, let's say that how will the 115th app, whatever that is, like how would they solve this problem of integration, right? Because they have this. So, and why do you think Cobalt, like how does Cobalt help this 115th app here?
Absolutely. So, to answer that, maybe we can quickly look at what are the current alternatives that people have right now, right? How do they build integrations? There are generally currently four major ways to build integrations, right? One is obviously build it in-house, right? Use your engineering team. The engineering team starts building integration one by one, go through the API docs. But obviously, that's not really scalable. So beyond first few integrations, you are not really able to add more apps. Another way is that you can roll out an API marketplace. So some of the product-led companies like, let's say, Webflow, Canva, they are even Shopify, right? They have, API marketplaces. People come and build their own apps in the marketplace. Right. But obviously, those are only few privileged companies that could do that. Not everybody could do that. Right. Another way is that you leave the onus of integration on the customer. That, hey, like you go ahead and build the integration, probably buy Zapier, buy a platform if you're enterprise, like buy Workato, right? But, you buy the tools and then build the workflows yourself, build the integration yourself. And last is that maybe you can outsource it to an agency or professional services, but that's really expensive, right? Like you can't really scale that. So the cost of building integration increases. So these are the current alternatives that people have. Generally, what we do at Cobalt is we have packaged these pre-built connectors, in a single SDK, and we give it to the engineering teams and they can build on top of that. So what happens is that, all the integrations, let's say what Zapier could offer, are already packaged up in form of APIs or SDKs, but engineering team could really quickly build an integration marketplace or an experience for their customers. So this solves them to go to market really faster. And this is a fully native or seamless integration experience. Unlike, let's say, Zapier, where the person has to go to a third-party platform and then build the workflows themselves. So that's how we, at Cobalt see the future of integrations, like building the long-tail apps should be native, should be seamless. And that's what we are trying to enable.
Nice. I think that's an interesting, gap or space that you have found where, integration is always is a challenge, will be a challenge. And as you said, like fortunate companies with lots of time, resources, money can go and use any of these four examples or ways that you mentioned. But, definitely there will be some cons or some scalability issues or some problems that might happen, right? Or that will happen rather eventually. So I think Cobalt's in a great space, but coming back to the growth team at 115th the tool or platform where you have to go in and integrate, let's say you're selling one deal where they have 100 integrations or 100 platforms already, and now obviously you don't want to integrate with all of them because used by multiple teams, but you want to integrate, let's say you're selling to the marketing side and you want to integrate with the basics, right? Your CRM, your marketing automation platform, your email platform, and a few others. So and you go to another deal and they have a separate stack, right? Or a separate set of the same category of tools, right? So obviously having a lot of integrations makes sense. Like as a company, like if I want to go increase my TAM, I would want to have a lot of integrations right from the beginning, which is obviously not possible, right? With limited time and resources. So how does this company uses integrations as a lever, right? Like how do you prioritize on which integrations you want to build, right? Let's start there. Like how do you prioritize it? Like if you're this company and you want to build a CRM integration for your clients, right? Like there's HubSpot, there's Salesforce, there's Zoho, Freshworks, and Pipedrive. And there's a lot of CRMs in the market, same for marketing automation and same for each category. So how do you prioritize then, right? Because if you start with HubSpot, you don't have others. And if a company is using Salesforce, you can't go and sell there and vice versa, right? So let's like just want to understand like how do you think like companies should prioritize on which integration to build?
Yeah, I know that's a great question, and generally it's something that you're constantly thinking that how do you prioritize or how do you build your integration strategy in an overview, right? So generally what we have seen is people start with couple of integrations. They, you know, round up the usual suspects, like add Salesforce, add HubSpot. Let's say if you're building CRM integrations, you generally start with these two apps. That's a no-brainer, right? You know, you start adding these integrations with a very bare minimum use case in mind, especially for the early stage companies and let's say companies that are at Series A, B stages. They would, you know, start building simple use cases around these integrations. And then the way you generally decide and use it as a guiding factor is in terms of which market do you operate? Do you, if you operate at SMB market, maybe mid market or enterprise level market, so you can quickly segment into your ICP needs. Let's say generally with the SMB market, you know, some tools like Zoho and Pipedrive are very important, like much more important than HubSpot and Salesforce. So that segmentation and clarity is important. Being an early stage company, obviously you are at times clueless because you're selling to everybody, right? So you generally don't know where are your customers. And that's why going with a proactive list of integration you know, in your marketplace helps. Sometimes you could look at G2 categories and see, you know, what are the top CRMs in any space, right? So generally the way we advise customers as well that, hey, we'll help you market. We'll help you figure out what are the top apps in the geography or in the segment that you are operating. And then maybe the top, some of the top apps, you know, you can start building very, very quickly. Another interesting way that people, what we have seen people often using it is that they just list the apps without actually building it, right? It's a really cool way to gauge interest. Right. So you know, basically create like an ecosystem of apps, and you can collect upvotes from people. You can take requests and take integration use cases from people, and then collect all of that, and then maybe decide that what apps do you want to launch. So yeah, I mean, we have seen a varied strategy all across when it comes to launching the first set of integrations.
Nice. Like that's a cool way to just gauge as a company when you are building integrations for your customers, right? Like just to understand like which ones should they prioritize and which ones should they pick. But shifting gears a little bit, just to understand, let's say if you are a company where you offer integrations with other companies as well. So think of like HubSpot as an integrations marketplace, right? And you are building one, you're probably connector, let's say Google Sheets connector for HubSpot, right? Like get all your data from HubSpot to a Google Sheet, and you're building this app and you want to get listed on the marketplace. So why do you think like, or how should like a company go about listing into the marketplace? Is that a good idea, bad idea? And how can you use this marketplace to expand your reach and visibility? Right, like to get more new. So, like, how can integrations be used to, you know, get new customer who never knew about your product that existed before?
No, absolutely. That's an amazing point, right? And generally, integrations affect all three segments of revenue teams. Like, and this listing in marketplace is a very, very good strategy for demand generation, lead generation teams. It typically depends on what are you building. It is not applicable, it is not generalized for every kind of SaaS there, but some of the early companies have leveraged the popular app ecosystems like Salesforce App Exchange, HubSpot app, apps like HubSpot has more than 1,000 apps, and it's a very, very powerful way to get your product discovered, at least in the early stages. Similarly, let's say on the e-commerce side, Shopify Marketplace is very, very popular. Google Workspace has a very active directory of apps. And if you're building an app specifically, like let's say if you're building a Chrome extension maybe Google Sheet or Google Drive add-on, then listing is a no-brainer. It's a must-have thing. But listing is not enough. Like basically listing also has some kind of SEO elements. Like you need to have a very well-written heading, very well written description of the product, because the discovery is enabled there. Like people on Shopify probably would be searching for, let's say, some a particular type of tool, a tool that could, let's say, help them create deep links, right? It's a very simple problem that a lot of e-commerce stores are looking for. So then your listings should reflect that. So it's kind of like app store optimization is what you look at. Reviews are also very, very important. So generally, we have seen listings and partnerships work out really well for companies in the early stages. They can piggyback on the the larger app ecosystem, get some leads initially, and immediately deliver value. The moment you start scaling up, obviously you look up to other distribution channels. But yeah, it's not general, but it definitely works a lot.
Nice. And you mentioned that there are three revenue streams that you can impact from integration. So one, marketplace is obviously one of them that you that you shared. So what are the other two?
Marketplace listing is generally helps you in demand gen, lead gen. Sometimes partnerships teams obviously have the specific KRA of building these listings, but the other two obviously being sales and the retention teams, right? So and that's where the biggest impact of integration would come up. So generally, in terms of sales led SaaS companies, integration is the ammunition of sales person, right? Account executive. Going into the market with a set of integrations, is something that you really see the good sales teams. We see a huge closure deals for the simple reason integration is a very, very common buying factor. And that's why you see a lot of companies also, saying that, hey, we have 1,000 plus integrations. Obviously, out of 1,000, like 800, 900 are powered by probably, Zapier or Workato. But it's a good to have number, good to have, good for the sales team to show that, hey, we can take care of a lot of integrations. And this is also one of the major mistakes that some of the early stage companies make. Like they use integration as a reactionary strategy that, hey, if my customer would need it, ask for it, then I'll go ahead and build that. But we have seen companies are who are proactive, who go with an integration marketplace, even though it's not fully ready. But let's say, as I said, like you can have an ecosystem where you collect the upvotes and all. But showing the power of integrations, early stage creates a huge impact. You can, compete with the larger existing players saying that, hey, we have integration. Again, for the simple reason, because buyer, 70% of the buyer says that it's a deal breaker if you don't have integration. So, impact on sales team is the primary impact for integration, and it directly affects the growth. Another thing, there is the other retention teams, NRR teams. What we have seen, especially recently, is that integrations, when you're selling an app, even though your app has a really powerful use case, there is a huge risk of churn. Right, like if maybe the churn could be driven by factors that are out of your control. It could be, let's say, a market factor. It could be, maybe the agenda or goal of the company has shifted, right? But what happens is, like, once the app is integrated with multiple applications, especially like system of records, like CRMs, or maybe employee HRIS or other tools, like depending on which segment are you selling to. But once you have that stronghold where your roots like kind of are implanted in a company, the churn drastically decreases. Like there's a stat that we saw that around 20-25% churn actually being reduced in some of our customers just with the ability once when they had more than four integrations with their customers. So it's a very powerful way for retention teams to make sure that their NRRs are the churn is really low, and teams always stick to the product. So typically integrations affect every single aspect of revenue function.
Yeah, I think that's a little nice little insight where and now that I think about it, like if I'm owning an app and like I have like that app connected with like 10 other platforms and it's working well, and now if there is a time for renewal, I'll obviously think like if I'm buying a new app or if I'm letting go of this one, So I would think like how it would affect the data flow or the data accuracy or whatever, or the usual workflow for these 10 apps, because, you know, like A, it's like, it's already there. It's already in place, right? The system is built. So maybe just keep it as it is and renew with the same one instead of finding a new, you know, replacement or new alternative, which has probably like eight connections only as opposed to 10 that we had.
Absolutely.
That's a nice insight. And like Jugal, what would be your recommendation to founders, especially when they get into situations like you said that integrations is like an arsenal for sales team, and their sales team went ahead and promised like, hey, we have this integration, and like now the deal depends on the deal closure depends on the integration's existence, right? So and obviously like the product team, the engineering team have a lot of like backlog always, and they're always building something. Now what would be your recommendation to founders in such a situation? Like should we like drop everything and like go behind this integration just because we are going to close like 80k deal or 100k deal or whatever, and or maybe should we, you know, keep that or let that go, because obviously you don't want to let revenue go, but you also want to like change the priority of your product engineering team, right? So I'm sure like a lot of founders when they're scaling would come into these situations like in many ways, and I'm sure a bunch of your customers might be as well. So what is your insight or what is your recommendation to founders who land in the situation?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, right? So I mean, especially for the founders who are you know, building integrations, who see the need of integrations from their customers, right? Firstly, I generally recommend that them that have you know, an ammunition of integrations already in your marketplace. Like, don't be reactive, be proactive, have a lot of integrations. Just showcase to your customers that, hey, we have it. You don't really have to build everything, but maybe, you know, and this is one of the features that we generally add in Cobalt as well, that, hey, just start collecting, you know, need, or start showcasing need, you know, showcasing that you have the ability to build integrations, and then go back and build it very, very quickly. And the second thing is that at times when you are especially selling to enterprises, it's not just a simple integration, or let's say having number of apps. It's the depth of integration that also matters a lot. Like, for example, right, like if you're talking to a smart buyer, right, and they, you know, you talk about CRM integration, suppose you do HubSpot integration, but, you know, accessing one or two objects of HubSpot, let's say deal or opportunities, is not always enough, right? The depth of integrations could be very, very complex. Sometimes you need to access some custom objects, some custom fields, right? Maybe, you know, you need to push the data back into the system. It's not always syncing, but, you know, pushing data back, creating tasks, creating activities based on the product use cases, like just sticking to the CRM example. But, you know, having that insight, or maybe the ability to showcase that you have the depth of integration, is very, very powerful when you're looking to close 80K deals, right? So one great suggestion is, and this is something that, you know, even with Cobalt we enable, is you could actually, so you know, you could enable sales teams to create some micro demos of integrations, right? Like, you can show some basic demos of integrations to your customers, just to you know, let them know that you can have you already have an integration. So you know, you'd not necessarily have to build a full-fledged integration out there, but just having some understanding, some depth of understanding of integrations, is goes a long way in closing a deal. So just generally be, have that. So just summarizing the point here, that have a proactive approach, have a huge marketplace, also have some clarity on, you know, depth of integration, you know, go with the ability to, you know, cater to some complex enterprise needs as well, and not just stick to some basic integration, plain vanilla integrations. So yeah, that's how we have seen early stage startups.
Nice. And you know, now once you have these like, you know, integrations in place, like, how would, like, what's the best way to, you know, leverage let's say marketing initiatives, or, you know, do integrated marketing campaigns with these the sort of integrations that you have built? Like, how do you go and market it along with the other company, or if you're doing it even on your own with their help? So What are your recommendations for companies when they're also picking integrations, or maybe they're allowing other people to build integrations on their stack?
Absolutely. So I'll break this problem into two parts.
Right.
Maybe it will be relevant for you as well. So one would be for new customers. Let's say when you are marketing to prospects that, hey, we have a lot of integrations. And second could be marketing to your existing customers who are already using the product, but saying that, hey, we are launching new integrations. Why don't you use and try it? Right. So coming to the first part, which is like prospects and in general, having audiences. Basically, the first and foremost thing is that list your integrations on website, right? People do come on your website, they check how many integrations are there, they actually read what all use cases do you cover. It's obviously it's very difficult to have maybe, you know, an explainer video or maybe an explainer article about every single integration. But the first thing that you should at least do is list all the integrations on the website, because this is a very important, buyer thing. All the buyers would go, this insight actually comes from after seeing a lot of buyer evaluation documents as well. Like we interviewed a lot of buyers, and integration was a very, very important line item. Generally, they would not even ask the customer, ask the software, and they would simply go to the website, see that, okay, these are all the integrations that are available. Probably they don't have a new integration and just make up a decision. So it could be a silent factor that could cause you to lose a deal, right? So just make sure that you list all the integrations on the website. Another way is that whenever, let's say, you do a marketplace listing, you know, go post, brag about it, just, you know, post it on social media. A lot of people at times like do the discovery. Let's say you could do collaborative campaigns with the app exchange where you're listing, right? So you could do some campaigns, tag, let's say if you're listing an app on Shopify or Salesforce, right? Tag Salesforce, tag Shopify. At times they could pick your post and repost that. So you could get a lot of traffic there. This is specifically for the companies that are looking to piggyback on the marketplace app. But yeah, right. Like be very vocal about your integrations when it comes to, you know, targeting new customers. On the second part of it, in terms of marketing integrations to your existing customers, right? This is also very important, because obviously, like as we discussed, right, like the more connected they are, the less chance of their churn is, right? So you need to make sure that they are using those integrations and not just like simply using your product.
Right.
So what we have seen is there are different ways to it. Sometimes there are problems. Like, for example, even though you have an integration, but the person who has to authenticate that integration, let's say you're using a CRM, you sold to a marketing team, but the access of CRM is with the sales ops person, right? Or maybe with an IT team. So to get that access or to get that authentication done is hard. Right. You know, even your user is not able to get access to the CRM or the admin level access. So, you know, we have a very cool feature for this. We have an auth collector. So we create a unique URL, just send it to the customer, and customers can send it internally to whosoever has access or admin access can immediately, you know, give the authentication. And then you collect the authentication, and then you come back and you configure how do you want to use the integration and everything. But you constantly need to send emailers that, hey, we have launched these new integrations, and maybe have some use case around how to use that integration. What are the benefits around that? And sending regular reminders to your users is very, very important. So we have seen at least once a month touch point on, you know, how if, let's say, if a customer is not activated with integrations, right? So you can have an integration activation matrix internally as part of your customer success team, and then make sure that you get to that. So,
interesting insight. So you mentioned integration activation metric. That's it's a good segue into the next part on what are some of the metrics that the companies can track on with respect to integrations, whether they are offering integrations to different apps to build, or whether they are building their integrations on other marketplaces where they're connecting with people. So what are some of the like metrics that you mentioned, like, okay, how many integrations are there and how many are activated, right? So what are some of the other metrics that you generally would track?
I think one of the most important metric, Sunil, here is, usage of integration. And you could break down usage into multiple ways. So for example, let's say you know, a company that uses integration for, let's say, a migration use case, that you know, I want to migrate data from some other application, and I just like press a button and I am able to export probably 100,000 contacts from the CRM, right? Another use case could be, let's say, I want to subscribe to a webhook, and whenever a contact is created, I want to access that data. So in the first case, you know, you have 100,000 records, all of them migrated in one shot. And in the second case, you have records one by one coming to your app. But ultimately, that number of records, or like number of API calls, as that's how we call it. So basically, then the number of transactions or operations that you are doing for your customers, the first thing is that you should be recording that internally, at least, so that you can have, you can understand the health of integrations, right? So not just the number of integrations that they have activated, but how many operations or executions are actually happening with that integration, right? This could help in two ways. One is, obviously, you understand the health of integration, that has the, is the user actually using that integration or not? And second is, you could also, you know, in future, maybe create a business model around that. Like, let's say if you are using 10,000 API calls or 10,000 executions, right? Maybe this is X price that, you know, you need to pay. Otherwise, like, you need to upgrade the plan to this and so on and so forth, right? Like, essentially, this is like a Zapier business model. Like, if you do a 10,000 execution, Zapier charges, like, let's say $20 per month. But instead of customer paying to Zapier, the customer can directly pay you, and you can, you know, actually monetize these usage. But the first and foremost priority still remains that, you know, you can monitor integration health. So integration is not really activated as long as they are not using it, right? So managing account level, integration level usage is really, really important there.
Nice. I think these are interesting metrics to track and just gauge that, okay, like I've launched these to customers, but, and they've connected, but you know, maybe it's not being used, or maybe it's not being used properly, and so on, right? So what, like, you know, we can go to the last section of this, like the podcast episode, which is the lightning round. But just one thing, like, how can, like, you know, customer success, or like, you know, customer success team can come in and when they, like, you know, avoid this happening, right? Like, avoid these disconnections, or avoid like, you know, low usage, or avoid no usage, right? Like, what are some of the ways that you have seen where you know, you are kind of pushing the customers to use the integration in like different ways, or, you know, different use cases? Like, how do you promote more usage of integration?
Yeah, no, that's a great point, right? And it's tricky, it's hard, like if because setting up integrations or configuring integrations partly happens during customer onboarding phase, but like at times, let's say you are launching new integrations maybe later, right? So the customer is already activated, onboarded, but how do you make sure that your integrations are now used properly? So one good way is that once you start recording these metrics, like how many, you know, let's say operations are they doing with that integration, if that's very low, or maybe how many number of integrations are there, you can start echoing these messages, you know, to stakeholders as well, like that this is what is happening with integrations, like these are how many apps that you're using, along with your general, let's say, analytics. So you know, it's very important to announce and be vocal about the integration right from early on, so that you can set the expectation right. You can, you know, we have seen some teams even making some case studies, you know, sharing some case studies with integrations, that hey, like if you actually launch this integration, you can access these features, these additional features as well, and it could create X or Y or Z impact in terms of your outcomes, right? So defining that or identifying that is a very, very specific journey for a company. And, you know, once they do that internally, the customer success team starts picking top, you know, one or two points that they could leverage that. It's a very powerful way to move, you know, stakeholders and get it into motion.
Nice. And just a really good example coming to me right now is, again, like I use Read.ai to record like meetings and conversations. And again, this on this podcast also, there's like this assistant that's recording this Read.ai. So I don't have the paid plan, but I have a paid plan for Zoom, right? So, and I've integrated Zoom with Read.ai, and they have a cool feature where, or a cool way, which says that if I have a paid Zoom plan, and if I've integrated that with Read.ai, then I will get a certain level of features with Read.ai as long as my paid Zoom plan stays with me. So as long as I'm a paid Zoom user, I will get like 5 or 6 new features, which generally is not there on the free plan. But some glimpse of a pro plan automatically added to my subscription just because I'm a paid Zoom user and I've integrated that with Read.ai.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And that's a very powerful way, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
that's a great
definitely.
Example, yeah.
Cool. So coming to the like the new section of the episode, which is the lightning round. I know I've asked you a lot of questions already, and we have done that. But there's like 3 more, which is not related to integrations. Thank God. like the first one, like what is the one thing that has helped you shorten your learning curve?
Shorten my learning curve. Okay, interesting. I think. Reading a lot, right? I mean, basically thinking in frameworks, basically. I keep reading a lot, right? So I try to read something and implement that in my life very, very quickly. Generally, information could be overwhelming, right? Like you have so much to do that. But once you take
Right.
that and try to convert into some micro action, right? The value to yourself increases a lot. So like I make sure that whatever I'm learning, whatever I'm consuming, I try to implement that in my life. Otherwise, it's useless for me. So that's how I measure things. So that
Makes
fast
sense.
tracks my learning curve.
Makes sense. The second one, right? Like, what do you know about your work now that you wish you would have known when you first started?
Interesting. I think. You know, it's very important to understand, you know, you keep reading about it, but like, it's basically like, think from the perspective of customers, right? Like solve real problems of users, right? It's when I was starting up with Cobalt, right? Like everybody said that, hey, what's the pain point, right? I always thought from a product manager's perspective, like this is what I could build, you know, for people. But going back, looking back, you know, in my journey, I think it's easier said than done. But thinking from the perspective of customers, right, understanding the real need and, you know, removing the noise around it is a very, very powerful way. You know, focusing on that from day one would have been much, much more effective. But yeah, I think
Nice.
nonetheless, I'm happy where we are.
It's a good learning as well. And on to the last one, right? Like what did your biggest professional failure teach you?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe I'll not call it a failure, but I think back when I was building my consumer startup, right, we sold it in 2018. It was a digital health platform. In 2020, COVID hit. Right, the value that we could have gotten would be 10x, 20x, 100x, whatever. Right, so
crazy.
The learning here is that hold, wait, you know, just be in the market, and there would be a bull for a positive cycle for sure. Right, so
nice.
That's my learning, that be patient in life.
Nice, nice, interesting. All right, thanks, Jugal, for all the insights. Again, very, very helpful for anybody who's like building integrations or just starting up or in the scale mode of for their startup and like have a lot of deals stuck or getting lost because of inexistence of integrations. Like very good insights here. So thanks a lot for taking time and sharing all these insights with us. And like I'll drop in your LinkedIn URL in the episode description. So if anybody wants to connect with you, they can and say hi.
You know, thanks so much, Sunil, for having me here and giving me this opportunity to talk about integrations. It's a very, very important topic for sure for me.
Nice.
But yeah, just
Yeah.
To your audience as well, like anybody who wants to talk to, you know, just want to soundboard on integrations or how to think about integrations if you're in early stage, mid stage, late stage, right? Happy to, I'm always available. Happy to chat.
Great, great.